Welcome to Community Connections. I'm Alan Collier, and it's my pleasure to be with you actually for the next 3 hours. We've got a very interesting interview coming up in just a moment. Then after that, between 1 and 2, we've got the legal people from Hutchinson Legal coming in to answer a few questions and bring us back some answers from last month. And then between 2 and 3, I've got somebody in for Choice Tunes, a young person. A little bit of a different Choice Tunes today, but we'll find out what that's all about between 2 and 3. But first of all, I've got with me Sandra. Now, Sandra has been, and there is still one more creative writing for people with autism to come up. We're going to talk about that. But also, she's quite a renowned author and written a couple of books on autism. So she's going to be a great person to talk to. So first of all, welcome, Sandra.
Thank you, Alan.
Thanks for coming in. Now, I think there's a lot of misinformation or probably lack of understanding about autism. So just briefly, for the listeners that don't know, can you give us a bit of a broad outline on first of all, what autism is, which part of the brain and that, but secondly, the limitations that puts on a person's life, please?
Obviously, it's hard to explain really briefly, but I think one of the key things here is that autism is a different way of the brain has a different way of processing. So it's really important to think of that as a difference, not a fault. And one of the phrases that you'll hear a lot is people say, if you meet one person with autism or you meet one autistic person, you've met one autistic person. And I think that's true. We're not all identical. We're not all the same. So yep. I have to say that up front because I don't want to make generalizations. No. It is a spectrum. It is very broad. And every autistic person will have different strengths and different challenges.
Can I just ask you, Sandra, when you say it's a different way of thinking, does that cover all your way of thinking or only certain parts of your thinking?
Our brains process information differently, and that relates to, so if you look at the way that they diagnose autism or the way that they sort of determine that someone's autistic, it relates to different aspects of the way that we interact with the world. So one of the things that is very different for a lot of autistic people is the way that, so I'm an autistic person. So
you acknowledge that?
I acknowledge that,
absolutely.
You know
what you're doing?
I'm very comfortable with that. Is the way that we physically experience the world, so the way that our senses experience the world. So that means for a lot of autistic people, we can either be very sensitive to sensory input or less sensitive to sensory input than other people.
Oh, right, yep.
So that, in my case, that means that I find things like bright lights and loud noises and strong smells really overpowering. So much more so than other people do. And that actually really impacts on the way that I experience the world. So when people see autistic people or they think about autistic people, what they see or what they think about is what they see from the outside.
Yeah.
So you see that sort of stereotype of an autistic child having a meltdown in a shopping centre. And people think, oh, badly behaved child. But what's actually going on for that person is often a result of all that sensory input. So our brain...
It could be the bright lights at the plaza or something like that.
That's right. So that light that to you might seem a little bit bright, to that autistic person is... It's painful. It's such a bright, intense light that it causes physical pain. And then on top of that, the noise of all the people talking and the machines humming is this intense, overpowering, loud noise that's deafening. And then there's all the crowds of the people. So imagine that everything is amplified to four times how you see it and feel it and hear it and smell it.
Because I know one of the supermarkets that I attend to, I think they have an hour in the morning, either a couple of times a week and that, where they, especially for people that like that, and they dim the lights and they make sure there's no music playing and all that. So is that, so that would make it a lot easier for you or somebody to go and do the shopping?
Absolutely. So for me to go and do my grocery shopping in a normal supermarket is actually virtually impossible, because I go in there and there's so many people and there's piped music and there's bright lights and there's all of those other things, and it's just too hard to do my shopping because I can't focus. So when we talk about autism, it's really important to think about, and that's why I talk about that thing about the way our brains process information. We need to think about what's going on for that person, not just how that person seems to the person on the outside. And when we talk about autism being a spectrum, and that's probably a term you've heard a lot, yep. The autism spectrum, yep. And people often think of that almost like it's a ruler. You know, at one end of the spectrum, there's this very autistic person,
yep.
And the other end of the spectrum, there's this not very autistic person. And that's not actually what the spectrum means. It's like a colour wheel,
right?
And so people might have a little bit of blue or a lot of blue, and a little bit of green or a lot of green. So some autistic people will have a lot of those sensory challenges,
yep.
And some will have none. But that's one aspect of autism. Another aspect of autism is the need for rituals, and another one of those characteristics that you'll see a lot is what we call restricted and repetitive behaviours. So again, the stereotype that you see is, you know, the autistic child sort of rocking backwards and forwards or lining up cars.
Yep.
So we tend to have quite restricted interests, so very intense focus on particular hobbies or particular interests or particular things that we'd like. A lot of autistic people like to have collections of things. We get very, very interested, very focused on things. And we also often use repetitive behaviours, what we would call stimming, or self-stimulatory behaviours. So that's things like rocking or flapping or fidgeting or spinning toys. And again, if you look at those behaviours from the outside, people will say, oh, that looks weird. We'll try and stop the child doing that, or we'll try and stop the person doing that. But those things are actually really functional behaviours for us. And again, that's about how our brain processes information.
We've just got to take a break in a minute, but could I just ask you, does that mean that while you haven't got, pardon me, while you haven't got the spread of abilities, does that mean that what you do a whole lot better rather than like other people who are a bit of a scattergun and a bit of good at everything but master of none?
That's absolutely right. So when people talk about autism, they talk about challenges and they talk about limitations, and it's important to actually acknowledge that we have strengths. And that's why I was saying, think about that colour wheel, because if we turn those things around and we focus on them as strengths, that focus on a particular interest or a particular area that someone is following can actually become a real strength. They can become an expert in their area and really develop that into a career or a passion or a talent.
I've just got to take a quick break.
A melody beneath the stars, my 10 guitars will play a song for you. And if you're with the one you love, this is what you do. Oh, dance, dance, dance to my 10 guitars. And very soon you
guitars are made for love, my band of men will always say. So give them all a pretty girl, and they will start to play. Beneath the stars of my 10 guitars will play a song for you. And if you're with the one you love, this is what to do. Oh, dance, dance, dance to my 10 guitars. And very soon you know just where you are. Through the eyes of love you see a thousand stars. Oh, when you dance, dance, dance to my 10 guitars. Ooh, let me tell you now, dance, dance, dance to my 10 guitars.
And I know a lot of ladies love Engelbert Humperdinck, so I thought I'd put him in there with the 10 guitars. I'm talking to Sandra, and we've been talking about autism. We're going to continue to do that. But I must say, she's also written a couple of books, which we're going to talk about a bit later on. But you said during that part of our discussion that you were diagnosed at a later age, and that doesn't matter when it was diagnosed. But how did they diagnose it? And secondly, did you then think, hey, that's made sense? You know, all those years I thought X, but now I realise Y.
Absolutely. So when I was a child, autism wasn't really a thing. And so it was never considered as a possible explanation for the experiences that I had. So I went through.
Did they just think you were being naughty?
No, I wasn't. I wasn't naughty. So I guess that's one of those differences between males and females. And one of the things that we know with autism is, for a long time, people thought that autism was a male thing, and we still see a lot more males diagnosed than females diagnosed. And over time, they're actually starting to see that actually there are a lot more autistic females than they realised. And that's to do with the way that autism presents itself. So I wasn't naughty. I grew up thinking that I was there was something fundamentally wrong with me because I didn't understand the world the way that other people did.
Right.
And I didn't behave the way that other people did. So if I talk about some of those things we were talking about earlier, like the restrictive and repetitive behaviours, I had habits that, things that made me feel comfortable, like I used to count the little dots on the floor. I used to talk to the little patterns on my sheets. I used to gather things. I used to count the syllables in words. Apparently, I used to make repetitive noises to relax myself when I was stressed. And I would be told, don't do those things, because those things are strange. And my parents meant well. They were trying to help me fit in. But what I learned was, other people don't do those things. Those things are weird. Therefore, there's something wrong with you. Don't do those things.
Right.
And I also learned that other people just knew how to behave in a conversation. They knew when it was their turn to talk. Mm. And they knew what to say. And they knew when people were joking. And they knew when people were serious, and they understood all this, and I didn't. So obviously there was something wrong with me because I didn't get that.
Well, not necessarily wrong, but just different.
Yeah.
Yep.
But I felt like I was wrong.
Oh, yeah.
As a child and even as a young adult. And, you know, I mentioned to you before about the sensory stuff. I thought that when I went to work and the bright lights gave me a headache and I was overwhelmed at the end of the day because it was so exhausting talking to the other people in the office. I thought everybody felt like that. And I thought that everybody got home at the end of the day exhausted, but they coped with it.
Right. So how did you eventually get how do they diagnose
it? So the way that they diagnose it, it's not a blood test. Right? That would be really easy. If it was just a blood test.
It's not going to be that easy,
So like many adults in my generation, I went through life thinking, okay, there's something wrong with me. And then I had two children, and my children were diagnosed as autistic, and I thought...
Oh, before you were?
Before I was.
Yep.
So my children were diagnosed, and I remember thinking, well, there's nothing wrong with my children. My children think just like me. And I started to think about some of the things that the school and the professionals said were strange about, or not strange, but were the things that they thought were typical of autistic children in the way that my two sons interacted with the world.
Right.
The behaviours they had, the way that they spoke to other people, the way. And I thought, well, those things are a bit like me. And I started to think at that stage, but I couldn't be autistic because I am a girl. Like, I was still in that, you know, autism is a boy thing, you know. But then as my boys kind of became teenagers, I talked to them and I said, you know, do you think it's possible that I could be autistic?
Like, so I actually asked the boys.
I actually asked my boys first. Yeah. Do you think? And they kind of looked at me and said, well, yes. Where do you think we got it from? And then I asked my husband, you know, do you think that I... And he said, well, I've always thought that, but... And so then I went through the process of getting a diagnosis. And that's a really challenging thing in Australia because the nature of the diagnostic process, it's a lengthy process. And it's done by a psychologist or a psychiatrist who's qualified to actually do that process. And it takes a long time, right? It's not a 15-minute appointment.
And is it, when you say it's a long time, is it a long time on the one day or a number?
It can be done in one day. It's typically done over a couple of days. Oh. And the waiting list for a diagnostic assessment is really long and the process is expensive. So they get you to do a whole series of tests. So, you know, cognitive tests, paper and pencil tests and physical tests where you arrange pictures and blocks, you know, all kinds of things. So there's all those sorts of tests. Oh. Then they do quite extensive interviews with you where they ask you questions about the way you think and the way you feel and the way you behaved as a child. And then they do interviews with other people close to you. So it might be your parents, it might be your spouse, it might be... So it's really about gathering all of that information together because what they're looking for are those aspects that I was talking about. So they're looking for, do you have those restrictive and repetitive behaviours? Do you have those really focused interests? Do you have the communication challenges that are typically associated with autism? So that's around the things like...
When you say communications, I don't want to butt in.
Yeah.
Are you talking verbal, written, or what, when you're talking communication? Because that's a big thing.
So communication, it's really about that... being able, do you communicate in the same way as other people? So it's that stuff that I was talking about. A lot of autistic people will be quite literal in their communication. So not really understanding the rules that just seem obvious to everyone else. So, you know, like I was talking to you about, when is it my turn to talk that come naturally to people? Understanding things like social rules around when you should tell the truth and when you should lie. I mean, we learn rules, right? You always tell the truth. So I always tell the truth. You know, if you ask me whether I like what you're wearing and I don't, I'll tell you because you asked me.
Whether I like it or not.
And so that's the sort of thing that they're looking at. Do we understand those nuances of communication? Do we have a communication style that differs from the way typical communication develops in terms of the way that we understand things that are said to us and the way that we communicate things. So it's actually quite a complex process, that diagnostic process. And then at the end of that process, they make an assessment as to whether or not that person is autistic.
Can I just ask you this? Do they say, yeah, you're autistic, but you're on the low side of it? Or the high side, or is a diagnosis just, yes, you've got autism?
That has changed over time. There have been many changes to the diagnostic manual, right. But what they typically do now is the current diagnostic manual has got rid of a lot of the... for a while there we had autism and we had Asperger's, and Asperger's was considered to be I don't really like this term, but a milder form of autism.
Yep.
Now, everyone is diagnosed with autism, but they assign levels, and those levels are to do with the amount of support that a person needs.
Yep.
So level one, level two, and level three are the different levels.
All right, so I don't want to talk about your sons because so I want to put it into a hypothetical. Is it possible that one child at school needs a support worker and needs them all the time, or another person may very well be almost out, providing the teachers understand that they are able to sort of, I don't want to say function normal way, but you know what I mean? Just they don't need that level of support. Do they? Is there level of support they need? I guess that's what I'm saying.
Absolutely. The level of support that different autistic people need varies. So some autistic people will be very able to articulate and explain their own needs and able to function in a range of situations. Some autistic people will need a lot of support. But I think one of the things that's really important there is to recognise that support needs are specific to the individual, but they're also specific to the situation. And that's why a lot of autistic people are very uncomfortable with that use of sort of functioning labels. You know, when they say someone's high functioning or low functioning, because if you say this person is requires this level of support, but that may vary depending on the situation and on the point that the person is in their life. So the level of support that that person needs in school might be quite different to the level of support they need at home. The level of support that they need when they're 10 could be quite different to the level of support that they need when they're 50. So I think that's why there's a level of caution required there. And I would argue perhaps for a regular reassessment of that, particularly with things like now the way we're very, very dependent on, you know, the NDIS system, which says if you've got a diagnosis of autism level one, realistically, you're highly unlikely to get support from the NDIS.
Right.
But you might have been assessed with autism level one at the age of, I don't know, 10, when you were in school and you had a certain level of support around you. But now you're 45 and you're unemployed and you're living in a home by yourself and you're unable to do your grocery shopping, is that person still a level one person not in need of support? So to me, I think we have to be really careful about not saying a person has a permanent support need.
All right, I've just got to take a quick break and we'll be back with more.
Someone to stand by me.
We saw the writing on the wall as we felt this magical fantasy.
Now with passion in our eyes, there's no way we could disguise it secretly. So we take each other's hand, cause we seem to understand the urge.
You're the one thing
that I can't get enough of. FM 99.1.
We're talking to Susan. We've been talking about autism, and we are building up to the workshop, the creative writing workshop that she's coming up. There's been a couple already, but we're going to talk about the one that's come out. But one of the things that I should mention also is that not only has Sandra done a lot of things in her life, including writing a book, which was growing up or growing into autism, which is her life story, but she's also a professor. And, you know, let's be honest, you can't be a dummy to become a professor. And I'm not suggesting that she is a dummy or that anybody on autism is. The point I'm trying to make is that autism doesn't hold everybody back, does it? It's just they've got to find their own way through I guess, what works for them, doesn't it?
Absolutely. Autistic people have lots of strengths, and it's really about finding people who will support you and help you develop those strengths and help you adjust to the challenges and the barriers. I was really fortunate when I first decided I wanted to be an academic to find someone who was my boss and my mentor, who could see that my passion and my focus and my drive was a strength. And he spent a lot of time helping me with the communication stuff and creating a safe space for me to work. And if I hadn't had him, then I wouldn't have been successful. And I think that's why I ended up leaving academia and saying, okay, I'm going to spend the rest of my work life working on advocacy and support and doing everything I can to help empower the next generation of autistic people to find those spaces.
All right, let me ask you, how long ago did you write the book?
Growing Into Autism, yep, was published in 2022.
So what made you want to write that book? Because of your journey, because you'd found it hard, or because you wanted to make it easier for other people? What actually said to Sandra, I'm going to write this book?
Well, it was actually the psychologist who diagnosed me. So I was talking to him and I said, because I want to know everything about everything, because
yeah,
that's just my brain.
Yeah.
And I was talking to him and I said, look, you gave me lots of recommendations of books to read, and I read lots of memoirs that were sort of people's stories,
yep,
of their lives.
Yep.
And I read lots of academic articles that were about this is the autism. But I couldn't find a book that actually explained to me, these are the aspects of autism, but this is what it actually feels like for an autistic person. And this
rather
is
rather than academia.
Yeah,
you wanted a personal story.
I wanted it actually explained. So a lot of the personal stories are just personal stories. They don't actually explain to me how it works or why it works.
Oh,
or
yep,
importantly, how can you actually support an autistic person? So I wanted a book that said, this is an aspect of autism, this is why it works this way, this is how you can make life better for autistic people. And he said, well, write it then.
Yeah.
And I thought, oh, I can't write a book. And anyway, but I did. And I was really, really happy that Melbourne University Press agreed to publish it. And I've just been absolutely blown away. They published it and the print run completely sold out, and they republished it.
Terrific.
And I have just had so much feedback from autistic people saying they read it and it really helped them understand themselves, understand the people in their families, and that's what I wrote it for.
So if we've got people listening today that have either got family members that, pardon me, that have got autism or they believe they've got them, where are they going to get hold of your book?
They can get it in most bookshops.
It's called
Growing Into Autism. They can get it in most good bookshops. They can get it on Amazon. They can get it from Booktopia. They can pretty much get it from most places. They can also get it directly from Melbourne University Press, the publisher.
So is that the only book you've written, or have you had a follow-up?
I have a second book coming out with Cambridge University Press, which is about the experiences of 37 autistic people working in academia. So it's professors and teachers and researchers.
Yep.
That comes out later this year. And I'm currently working on another book, which is more of a follow-up to this, which is about supporting autistic people in the workplace. And I also write a lot of fiction. So
What sort of fiction?
Two kinds, predominantly crime fiction. But also more sort of, I guess you call it contemporary fiction. I write short stories, and I write short stories with autistic characters. because I think that's missing. I think the only fiction we see with autistic people kind of uses us as sort of plot devices. It's very much focused on this person is autistic, isn't that sad?
Yeah.
And I write fiction with autistic characters who are just living their lives. They might be professors like me, or they might be children, or they might be shopkeepers, or they might be... But their autism is part of who they are.
Yep.
It's not the only plot line, right? It's just part of their lives.
I've got to take a quick break, and then we'll be back with more.
Yarra Valley FM acknowledges the traditional owners, the Wurundjeri people, as the custodians of this land we broadcast from. We pay respects to elders past, present, and emerging.
Sandra, and we've been talking all about autism, and she's written the book Growing Into Autism. I couldn't quite read it from here. And she's been very, very brave to tell us all about it. But now, the reason why we got you in, we wanted to know your background, because obviously you're very passionate for people with autism, but you're also running a program or a workshop for people with autism on writing. So do you want to tell us about that and also when it's on, please?
Okay. So I'm really passionate about encouraging creativity in autistic people, because there's this myth that autistic people are not creative and we don't have imagination. And actually, autistic people are very imaginative and great writers. And I was really fortunate to get a grant from the Arrow Rangers Council to run a series of three workshops to encourage autistic people in the council area, adults and children, to come along and really explore their passion for creative writing. So I have a group of people who, we've run two workshops so far. We've got one more to go, which is on Saturday the 25th of May.
Oh, that's my birthday.
Oh, there you go. And the aim of the workshops is that at each workshop we focus on a specific topic. I give them a bit of information about writing, and then they actually work on a story idea and share it with each other, share it with me, and then they go away and they work on that story. And the creativity in the group is amazing. Our youngest participant is 7. Our oldest is 73. So there's a,
Jeez, a real spread.
Yeah. And they're just such amazing writers. And it's great because so many of these people are saying, you know, at school I was told I can't write, you know, I don't, because we do communicate differently.
Yep.
But their writing is amazing. And at the end of the three workshops, we're going to be publishing a book with a selection of their stories that they've written.
Terrific, yep.
And we've been fortunate, we're going to be working with a local printery, Breen Printing, who are going to print the book, and we're going to make copies of that available in all of the council libraries and schools.
When it's available, let us know, please, and I'll let the audience know.
Absolutely. And yeah, we'd really love it if everybody got a copy of the book, because we really want to promote that, just how creative these people are, and really encourage other autistic people in our community and in other communities to kind of be inspired and not let people tell you can't do that because you're autistic, because it's not true. Autistic people can do anything. You know, we shouldn't be put in boxes or put labels on in terms of our capacity.
So it's on the 25th of May. Whereabouts and what time?
Workshops 10 to 1. It's at the Healesville Living and Learning Centre. But people do need to register in advance if they want to attend the workshop, because we do collect information from them about their support needs and their accessibility needs.
So how do they...
They register. They go to my website, which is
autisticprofessor.com.au.
And then there's a tab on the website for Autimagination, which is the workshops. And if they go on there, there's information about the workshops, about what we're doing and why we're doing it, and there's a link there to register.
The people have to be diagnosed as autism to be part of the workshop, wouldn't they?
They don't have to have a formal diagnosis, but they have to either have a diagnosis or self-identify as it is only for autistic people.
Yep.
But we recognise the barriers to diagnosis, particularly for adults, given the cost of diagnosis. So we're not requiring anyone to prove a diagnosis.
So is there a cost to come to
No, it? The workshops are free because the program was funded by the council.
Yeah.
Obviously, this is the third workshop. We are really optimistic, hopeful, that we will be able to get funding, whether from the council or elsewhere, to run this again, because it has been so popular and so successful. And, you know, I think the outputs are amazing, so I would love to be able to do it again.
All right, I'll take one quick break and then we'll be back with more. And get your paper and pencil ready, because Sandra is going to give you the contact details yet again.
Coming around,
turn around.
Every now and then I get a little bit tired of listening to the sound of my tears.
Turn around.
Every now and then I get a little bit nervous that the best of all the years have gone by.
Turn around.
Every now and then I get a little bit terrified, and then I see the look in your eyes.
Turn around, bright eyes.
Every now and then I fall apart.
Turn around, bright eyes.
get a little bit restless and I dream of something wild.
Turn around.
Every now and then I get a little bit helpless and I'm lying like a child in your arms.
Sandra, first of all, I must say I think you're a very courageous lady to have put it in writing. There's a lot of us that wouldn't like to see our live, all the warts and all printed on a book, so I think that that was a terrific thing you did. But for, the next thing is, could you just give us the contact detail, also your website, so that people can look up, and there may be the odd person that would like to talk to you that, that maybe has a feeling that they should do take something a bit further. So could you give us that again, please?
Yep, so the best contact is the website, which is www.autisticprofessor.
All one word.
autisticprofessor.com. On there, there's...
No AU.
Just www.autisticprofessor.com.
Yep.
If you go there, it's got the information about the workshops. It's also got information about my consultancy services, about my book, information about autism, and it's also got a contact us link. So you can email me with any questions about the workshops or about anything else that we've talked about.
All right. Look, it's been terrific having you in, Sandra, and I think that probably... Unfortunately, one of the worst things in life is the fact that people don't understand some of these things. Is that they hear these myths and they believe them. I mean, you've knocked a lot of those over today, which I think is terrific. And I think we are at a time in our lives or in society where people can live the life that they should live, not just be pigeonholed. And obviously it hasn't held you back. I mean, as I said at the start, to be a professor, a lot of people can't even make that, let alone you've done that. And you've learned along the line you had autism and you've printed a book that probably will help a lot of people.
I think that every autistic person can achieve all kinds of amazing things, different things, depending on who they are, their strengths, their challenges, and what it is they want to achieve. It's not about changing us. It's about changing the world around us. And
the perception, isn't it?
The perception and the supports that people provide and the understanding.
Yep. I think that's terrific. Look, thank you again for coming in. The name of your book is Growing into Autism by Sandra Tom Jones. So look out for it. And I'm sure if you Google, if you can't find your local bookshop, I'm sure if you Google it, you'll be able to find somewhere. Amazon and all those, they all seem to have these books, don't they?
Absolutely.
Do you know offhand how much it is?
It's, well, if you get it from, I think the recommended retail price is $35,
yep,
but it's actually cheaper on Amazon and some of those other sites.
They also are said to be cheaper. All right, I've got to go, unfortunately. Yeah, well, it's been a terrific hour. Coming up after the news and weather, we will have our legal people in and we'll work our way through. And then we've got Choice Tunes coming up at 2 o'clock, between 2 and 3.